first-party data is more and more valuable because all of the changes in the regulatory landscape on the tracking networks and the cookie networks, they're all getting cracked down on with the new privacy world and all the changes that are happening with Apple and Google and all these guys. So OneTrust is a really great spot because they have the direct relationship with the customer who says, you know, you're a financial service company, you use OneTrust. OneTrust helps you track every single of your customers' preferences as it relates to the first party data you collect on them. And then you work with Adobe to then go market with them. So that's a really nice synergy where Adobe says, yeah, you know, we want OneTrust in the room because it's going to help us be more successful because now I can actually appropriately leverage all the first party data.
Welcome to Software Snack Bites. I'm Shomit Ghosh of Bolt Start Ventures. And today we're excited to have Kumar Gautam on the pod. Kumar is a partner at Sands Capital, focused on their late stage venture practice. And in this episode, we're diving into OneTrust, covering the company's story from full end to end. So I guess, Kumar, just to jump right in, what does OneTrust do and what's the founding story?
Yeah, awesome. Well, hey, excited to be on, Shomik. Thanks for having me. So OneTrust is a kind of a classic example of a founder who came across a problem in their professional life and thought it could be applicable to many other companies. Kabir Bardet is their founder. He's in Atlanta working at a company called AirWatch. And AirWatch's product really is a mobile device management. So, you know, a lot of companies these days allow employees to bring their own mobile device into their workplace. So I've got one of these mobile device management products on my phone. And really Kabir's project he was working on was, obviously the company needs to track things about your phone, what data you're using, if there's any data leaks, things like that. But then also they have to preserve the privacy of what else you do in your personal life on your phone, right? So it could be things like pictures, or you might have different apps or whatever else you're doing on your phone. And they thought that that could be their competitive advantage in that market and a big differentiator if the app was more privacy aware. And Kabir, being entrepreneurial as he was, he thought, well, if we're having this problem, then a lot of other companies must be having this problem. So that really led to the start of OneTrust. And as luck would have it, you know, this was in 2016, and this was the year literally GDPR, the big European privacy law, came out. And, you know, the company really took off from there. So their first product was this privacy oriented workflow automation, data automation, tracking personal information, helping companies get and receive consent for what they couldn't use in the product. And really, they built out that comprehensive suite. And then, you know, Kabir and team sort of elevated the vision of the company to be focused on really trust with all stakeholders. So what does that mean? You know, obviously customers, which we covered in the privacy side, but then you also have investors, your employees. And so they added a GRC product, they added an ethics and compliance product, and really sort of built out this full tool chain on a platform, which is, you know, obviously they're continuing to invest behind and make it more and more extensible. So anyway, that's the story of OneTrust, and it's, you know, we're thrilled to be involved. We got involved with this business about a year ago, but we've known Kabir and team for a while. My partner, Michael, who you met, has had a longstanding relationship with them. We tracked their phenomenal execution over the years. You know, happy to be here to tell you all about it.
Well, I'm excited to dive in, but before we get to kind of the product, the platform, and sort of, you know, data privacy and GRC and all those areas, I guess first, just so people can understand, like, what's the scale of OneTrust, you know, whatever you can publicly disclose, of course, but, like, you know, how big is the company? How should people be thinking about the company?
Good. Yeah. Awesome. Well, you know, I checked with the team to get a few stats for you.
Thank you. Yep. That's good.
So they last disclosed that business was $400 million in ARR last year, which is a pretty big scale. And, you know, we're on track to be over $500 million here shortly. So, you know, crossing that $500 million mark. Company's operating close to free cash flow break-even, sort of striking good balance between growth and profitability. Probably the most impressively, they have 14,000 customers.
Wow.
1,200 customers, over 100K in ARR, 75% of Fortune 100, 50% of G2K. So really the tip of the spear for growth right now for them is going deeper within all these customers. especially the larger enterprises that have a lot more complexity and, you know, selling multiple use cases and modules and really bringing that platform vision to life.
Well, just amazing scale. That's pretty crazy. And I mean, that's why we like to cover it too, is I imagine it may be public in at some point in the future. So, but you know, when I think about OneTrust, right, I always think about the cookie collection sort of thing, right? I log onto a website, I can click what I want. I usually click strictly necessary cookies only, but you know, sometimes I'll give a little bit more. And so that module pops up for all of us, right? The users or the visitors of the website. But I guess like talk a little bit more about what that product actually delivers, because I'm only seeing it from like the website visitor perspective. So like, what is it actually doing? And is that like the core land product, like the initial product that everything's based around?
Yeah, that's a great question, Shomik. And you know, I also see a lot of the cookie banners. And Frank, actually, we're customers of OneTrust at Sands Capital, and we use it for some of our website consent forms and things like that.
Oh, well, sorry for only giving you the necessary cookies then.
But look, you know, the cookie piece and the website piece is really the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's actually a relatively small product for the business in the grand scheme of things. Really, the way to think about it is, you have a lot of customer data. Now, obviously, a lot of it's around this third-party cookie tracking, things like that. But the reality is the vast majority is actually more first-party. So it is actually when customers are engaging with your product, they're, you know, maybe they're signing up for a newsletter, or they're downloading some resource off your website, or they're actual customers and you have their billing information and credit card data and things like that. How do you operationalize privacy across those? So if I go to the website and I say, it's okay to send me a marketing email, but don't send me a text and don't track my cookies anywhere else, what does that mean for then on the back end for me to then operationalize that and actually execute that? Mm-hmm. So you need to connect to your CRM. You need to connect to your marketing automation. If someone's running data analytics on XYZ product, maybe they can't run data analytics on my zip code, but they can run it on some other thing that which I did consent to. And that's really where the magic is taking this sort of simple sounding thing, which appears on a website from consumer perspective, but then from a large business perspective that might be operating in many geos, many products, really operationalizing that and making sure that no PIA is being exposed, you are complying with GDPR and CCPA and all the other regulations. You have the right workflow internally. So say an incident does happen, how do you log that? How do you show it to regulators? And as you can see, they really shine in sort of the larger enterprises when these products start to get more and more complex.
That's interesting. I didn't think about the back end complexity of it. So it's like, yes, from the, it's like a B2B to C model almost, in the sense of like, you know, from our standpoint as website visitors, we're clicking all that stuff. But in the back end, it's got to make sure the databases are aware that no, you can't store that in this way, or you can't, you know, run the data or whatever. And so I think that sort of complexity is it sounds like what they're managing from the front end choices that the website visitor is making in the software.
Correct. Yeah, it's website user. You might be defining it yourself. Or the company might be defining at a top level to say we're not going to do this. So it might be some choices that the CIO or chief data officer whatnot are making in the back end. Can also be things that, you know, regulators are defining for the whole industry. So it could be that, you know, zip codes can't be used in credit decisioning, but they can be used in marketing. And that's something that the company has to manage and say, you know, these days, for example, California has a different consumer privacy law than New Jersey or Texas. And so how do you manage that across the board and segment your user base across that? That all has to happen internally at scale with, you know, as much automation as possible to make OneTrust customers' life easy and have them focus on what they're good at, which is producing great experiences for their customers and marketing to them and providing them services, as opposed to writing software to do all this stuff in-house themselves, yeah, which is really not their core capability, right?
Yeah. So we've talked about regulations, we've talked about privacy, we've talked about this kind of automated way of making sure you're not exposing PII or you're following those regulations, right? But then broadly, you talked about trust and GRC. So it just seems like, you know, it's a pretty wide platform, right? It went from a product that was solving an initial case and is kind of expanded. So I guess, like, I don't know what the right way to call it, modules or what components, but what are the main things that people should be aware of about the OneTrust platform?
Yeah, so there's obviously the privacy side, which is a whole suite of applications, some of which we discussed, and which includes, you know, everything from data mapping and data discovery to compliance and cookie consent and preferences, and then automation across different parts of your stack. And then on the GRC side is, you know, GRC has shown been this kind of ambiguous sort of catch-all phrase in software for a long time. It kind of covers everything from, you know, financial auditing to privacy to ESG, right? So really, I like the framework of how the OneTrust team had thought about it. Essentially, you're thinking about, you know, what are the promises you're making to your stakeholders, right? So you're saying to your customers, we're going to keep your data secure. To your employees, you're saying, hey, if there's any issues, you can call this helpline or you can report this problem. To your investors, you're saying, you know, we're going to follow good governance. We're going to stay on the correct side of all regulations. We're going to manage your company to certain ESG guidelines. And that sort of all rolls up into this like big GRC concept, but it's really a combination of different capabilities that are formed. Now, the cool thing is that all this sort of ties together really well, because at the end of the day, it's a common data model. It's a common workflow. So if you're applying for a SOC 2 audit, you know, some percentage of the questions in the SOC 2 audit will be about how you store PII, how you do consent, how many incidents did you have in the last year with regards to privacy. So that flows in really nicely with privacy. On the other side, you know, if you're onboarding different vendors, that's a kind of classic GRC use case. So you're supposed to do vendor due diligence of people you onboard. And you say you haven't filled a long questionnaire, some of it's security questions, some of it's, you know, IT questions. And on the other side, you say, okay, well, that automatically can then log for privacy purposes what data you're sharing with external vendors, if that's sensitive or not. So what's happened is this sort of big ambiguous market is sort of starting to consolidate. And, you know, the GRC market, it's like very software 1.0. So a lot of the legacy vendors are still on-prem, if you can believe it, hard to use. It's been very financial service and healthcare oriented, so really regulated industries. Now, what's happened with digital transformation is sort of like all companies need, you know, Stance Capital is using tools like this, you know, all companies need it.
Right, yeah.
And that's really expanded the TAM here, because you need something that's cloud-based, that's easier to use, and that can really leverage that common data model to give you as much automation as possible across the whole stack. So, you know, obviously the team can focus on higher value add things than integrating different tools together.
Yeah. So, you know, as you started to talk through some of those components, like different personas ran through my mind. So I think a lot of people think about OneTrust as the common persona being a privacy team. Right? Because, you know, data privacy, of course. But it sounds like actually there may be some other personas and stakeholders. So kind of what are those common ones that you see, you know, OneTrust users consisting of?
Yeah, maybe I can, you know, I'll talk through the buyer personas and I'll talk through maybe the user personas. So on the buyer side, you're right. The tip of the spear often is the chief data officer or chief privacy officer, usually reporting into the CIO or CISO of a company. And those guys will also be involved. Another common one is legal. So legal will have a good amount of input on the decision-making process because they are responsible for a lot of the regulatory compliance and things like that. So that's on the buying side. The company can actually also sell sometimes to business units. So for example, a marketing unit might have a very specific use case that they're trying to solve where they're trying to solve a data residency issue, or they're having some problems with, you know, maybe they operate in the EU and they need to install a solution to make sure they're staying right side of GDPR. Now, on the user side, it's a lot of its day-to-day users are IT and privacy teams. And then sometimes it's business teams going in for collaboration purposes. So, for example, I mentioned the data analytics use case earlier. You might be going in there to request access to a certain data set, and then that can flow through compliance to, you know, help you access that data set as a data science team. So that would be a business user.
Yeah, that makes sense. What kind of is a specific customer case study that you can bring up? Because I think people really like to, you know, see it brought to life, right? So like, and I do think a lot of people will know OneTrust, again, just from clicking on a website, but maybe, you know, whatever customer case study that you think you would like to highlight.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And, you know, this is, as you know, during our kind of due diligence, we do a ton of work with customers. And really, that's really where you get to hear where the value add is and where the ROI is of a lot of solutions. So I've got a good one on OneTrust that I can think of. So this is a financial service institution. Think of it as like tens of billions of dollars of market cap, you know, tens of thousands of employees. And they started with OneTrust on the privacy side. This was about 2 or 3 years ago. They were getting ready for CCPA, which is the California privacy law, to come into action. And they had a homegrown solution. So it was essentially SharePoint tool that they had built internally that they would use to track different parts of compliance with the solution. And it was some spaghetti code that they had sort of written alongside it. And, you know, they weren't confident it was working and it was taking a ton of time to maintain it. And it was the other thing they were having was a challenge with their data science teams, where data science teams would request certain data sets for product or analytical use cases. And they would approve those on a case-by-case basis because they would run a quick audit and say, okay, what PIA is in here? Can we use this for XYZ use case? And so that was really slowing them down because, as you can imagine, there's hundreds of these use cases that come up in a big enterprise on a day-to-day feature. And then the final thing is that as part of the privacy arena, consumers can actually request their data back from companies. So it's sort of a Freedom of Information Act, but for private businesses. So I can go to XYZ company, I can go to Nike and say, hey, can I have my whatever data you have on me, like, please give it back to me. And that's actually, this particular financial institution just couldn't do that because, you know, that's a very complex product to build. And that's something that you need to check multiple sources and consolidate all together. And you have to track me internally across all the apps and databases you have. So that just made it a no-brainer for them to go ahead and adopt something because they just couldn't even do that. And when we talk to this customer about ROI, you know, we focus a ton on ROI with business buyers. And so there's the cost side, which is, you know, you're building it, you're maintaining it yourself, and then you're taking a risk of making headlines if something goes wrong, which is a cost. And then there's the revenue side, which is your teams are moving faster, you're able to do these analytics in a more seamless way, so it's not slowing you down. And those were sort of the key components of the business case within this company for the adoption of the privacy module. Now, as they were adopting the privacy module as an implementation, they were actually in the middle of a refresh for their GRC tool. So I won't name the tool, but it's one of the common ones in the market. It's still on-prem. It's been going through a cloud transition recently. And that's often the catalyst for companies to look at OneTrust is they're going through a cloud transition in their on-prem tool, or they're adopting privacy from OneTrust. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the workflow from privacy cares over GRC because it's a common data model and sort of well-designed, sort of thoughtful cloud-based tool. And so this was a classic sort of mid to high six-figure land on the privacy side and then another mid to high six-figure expand with the GRC tool and very happy customer. So that would be, hopefully that brings to life, you know, the ROI and the use cases and how the customer journey goes.
Yeah, I think those customer requests are also crazy, right? Because it's just like you're nowadays you could be tracked on so many different ways and so many different systems. And so to actually get that all delivered to you seems like a crazy, crazy hard problem. So,
and Shomik, it's interesting because it's when we talk to this customer, I thought this would be like a one-off thing that you'd get maybe a couple of quarters, something like that. But this is, they actually get several hundred on a weekly basis. And so, you know, you have to put in some kind of automation to deal with that, because then that's not a manual problem to solve.
It sounds like I might need to be doing that more. I think I limit the cookie collection, but I don't actually ask them for the data on me. But, you know, maybe I'll start doing that. But, you know, if we move into so we've covered a lot about the product and the platform, you know, I want to move a bit into the market here. And it's, you know, a common thing that everyone talks about is kind of what's the total addressable market, right? So I guess for something like OneTrust, how do you do that kind of high level build to what the TAM is?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. So we do, you know, short answer is we look at it from a bottoms up basis. So we, you know, all the customer conversations I was referencing earlier, we talk to small, mid to large enterprises, sort of the segmentation there. And we think there's basically 25K to 200K of spend in on the small end, and then call it 2 million to 5 million of spend in the large end. And then this is an extremely horizontal product, so you don't really need to do any geo cuts or exclude certain verticals. 40% of the business revenue is international, so it just tells you that it's sort of already very scaled on a global basis. And you know, it's one of those rare opportunities in SaaS that it's, you know, unlike HR or something else where it's sort of already horizontal application opportunities are sort of pretty well served on the cloud side. This has been such a new and emerging area where it's really on the team to go execute and gain the logos and do the cross sell to get to the several, you know, address several billion dollars of the TAM. So, you know, whatever numbers, we come out somewhere between $15 and $20 billion on that build. But really, the punchline is that it's a multi-billion opportunity and really sort of one of those rare opportunities in SaaS where it's not already brownfield and, you know, you're ripping and replacing, but you're really going out and selling for the first time into a pretty broad landscape.
So to kind of back up that TAM is, you know, the competitive landscape is always a question in that. You know, you mentioned some of the on-prem stuff. You mentioned also in some cases like the custom scripts and the homegrown stuff. But I guess flesh it out for us. Like, what are the, you know, who are the biggest competitors? Where are the biggest competition that they face?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, homegrown is a big chunk of it. And then on the GRC side, you nailed it with the on-prem. You know, the high level framework here is that like most SaaS markets, there's usually not single winner, right? Or winner take all. So sort of similar philosophy here. We think OneTrust is already taking a outsized share because of the platform approach. So really differentiators, as I talked about, which is multi-product, ability to have this single platform and data sharing, and then also in terms of just being at the leading edge always on whatever the latest and greatest is in the regulatory landscape. So that's really been driving a lot of the outside share. I would say what we come across and at the tactical level of the go-to-market is the market today is slowly moving in this sort of platform orientation, but at the same time, there are many people that address specific use cases. So there might be incumbent or startup companies that might solve a urgent pain point in a certain market where OneTrust also has a product, and you have to meet those customers where they are and solve their need today and walk them on the platform journey. So it's a classic software maturity tale where, you know, you have all these customers on one hand that have taken the maturity journey, and maybe they have OneTrust and two other products combined together to solve maybe certain niche needs. And then maybe you've got some customers that are earlier on the journey, which have like one point solution and a homegrown tool, and maybe OneTrust in one business unit in one geo. And that's slowly getting consolidated here. So I think there'll be, you know, a handful of strong winners. We think OneTrust should be taking, you know, outsized share in this market. But no one obvious comes to mind, you know, similar to sort of what you might have in some other markets where it's sort of Coke and Pepsi. So we think OneTrust is the biggest platform with the most sort of scale across the most use cases. And, you know, as you know, in our process, it's a really big part is sort of investing behind clear market winners. And, you know, certainly have a lot of conviction in OneTrust's ability to continue to keep that that leadership position.
Yeah. So if we move into the business model components, I guess, you know, the easiest way to ask is just like, you know, how does OneTrust make money? But I guess really what I'm asking by that is there's so many different methods, right? It could be usage-based, it could be a platform fee with usage-based, it could be seat-based, it could be a combination, right? Like, you know, so how does OneTrust across the platform really sort of make money?
You know, very top level, it's a recurring revenue service. So it's a software business. And, you know, most enterprises are doing multi-year deals. So it's got really nice predictability in that sense. Now, obviously, the exact pricing is tied to really what modules you're using and what are the components of sort of value drivers for those modules. So generally, these are how much data, how much web traffic, how many vendors are you tracking in your third-party due diligence. So it's some metric that tracks the value or the complexity of the use case that you're addressing. It's usually not seats. It's usually tied to the exact module's use case, because in this case, you know, you could have a small company with a huge amount of web traffic, and we want to make sure we capture that. Or you could be a automotive business with a huge supply chain and you're tracking a lot of vendors. And so that would generate outsized pricing for that module, but maybe lower for certain other modules. And then, you know, obviously the more you use, the better pricing you'll get. So in terms of, you know, that market, it's a big driver these days in SaaS to have multiple products and be able to drive consolidation. So that's definitely a go-to-market play for OneTrust, is to have multi-product adoption and sort of consolidated pricing across those.
But if I'm understanding that correctly, it sounds like in each module, there's like almost like some sort of usage-based component to it, of like, if you're getting this many vendors, or if you're getting this many DSAR requests or whatever, right? Like, then we'll price you in some sort of tiered structure.
Exactly. It's not a pure play. It's not a cloud style full usage-based, but it's a usage as a proxy for value and complexity, and then a tiering-based model to make sure we price appropriately.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. You mentioned like a long tail of customers, right? Which is incredible. And so I guess, like, does that mean that OneTrust is a more bottoms-up type go-to-market motion?
It's really interesting. Yeah. So we've got, as you said, 14,000 logos. And in the early days, the business just had phenomenal logo velocity. But over the last, call it 3-4 years, it's been very focused on our direct field sales motion. So now it's more about going out and doing the kind of classic SaaS selling with field sales, more focused on solutions. So if you're getting in front of a company, talking to them about what problem they're trying to solve, if they're building the product, if they're trying to solve a marketing problem, if they have a certain regulatory compliance problem. There's just starting to develop channel partnerships with sort of the big consulting firms, because as you go deeper and deeper into the enterprise, you want to have great implementation partners. So that motion is just starting to get set up for us. And then with Adobe, we just had a partnership with Adobe where they're plugged in on the marketing automation side. So you have the privacy from OneTrust and you have marketing automation from Adobe, and it's like great co-selling motion there. So those partnerships are starting to develop. So if I had to sum it up, it started off with a velocity motion over the years, and now it's all about going deeper into enterprises, more solution selling, more partner-oriented selling, which means, you know, bigger field sales force.
I have a question that I want to ask you around that, actually. It's like, you know, I saw that Adobe partnership, and immediately my mind went to like, with all the stuff that's going with, I think it's called ATT, with Apple and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And then there's like a unified ID thing that Trade Desk is doing, and all this stuff. Like in ad land, there seems to be a lot of complexity and sort of cookie tracking and all these things. It seems like OneTrust knows what's happening, right? Like they know what data customers are saying can be collected. They know what data can't be, like all this sort of stuff. So like, crazy, crazy question here, but like, does OneTrust like eventually just become like, you know, an ad serving company themselves? Or like, does it make more sense to partner with like the Adobes and the Trade Desk and the whatevers of the world to kind of do that?
Yeah, Shomik, I mean, that's really interesting. I would say for the time being, it makes more sense to partner. So you're exactly right. Essentially, first party data is more and more valuable, because all of the changes in the regulatory landscape on the tracking networks and the cookie networks, they're all getting cracked down on with the new privacy world and all the changes that are happening with Apple and Google and all these guys. So OneTrust is a really great spot, because they have the direct relationship with the customer who says, you know, you're a financial service company, you use OneTrust, OneTrust helps you track every single of your customers' preferences as it relates to the first-party data you collect on them. And then you work with Adobe to then go market with them. So that's a really nice synergy where Adobe says, yeah, you know, we want OneTrust in the room because it's going to help us be more successful, because now I can actually appropriately leverage all the first-party data. You don't want to say blanket, okay, we can't market to Kumar because, you know, he checked no on XYZ. You might be able to say, hey, we can send him a banner ad, but we can't serve him XYZ, right? So that's a really great spot. The vision of being more of a kind of consolidated across customers, that's a little trickier because now you're mingling first-party data across different customers, and then you start running into those issues. But I think the partnership with people like Adobe, Salesforce, and others down the line, where your marketing automation vendors, I mean, we're investors in Klaviyo, so you know, we know this story firsthand, where first-party data is just so valuable because that's direct from the source with the consent of your customer to say, you know, you can market to me. And then OneTrust can actually help you enable that and drive the highest ROI possible on it, which is why you're seeing such great synergies with people like Adobe.
You know, I just have to ask it. I got to try and tap into some of that sweet Trade Desk gross margins there and profit stream. But no, I think it makes a ton of sense what you're describing in that way. Before we kind of move into some of the future areas, you know, the question everyone always asks is kind of moats, right? Like how do you assess the moats around this business? And so what's your answer for OneTrust?
Yeah. And look, this is where we spend a lot of time during our investment due diligence, focusing on moats. You know, tech moves so fast and you really want strong, durable competitive advantages. So there's a few areas here. So one is just the platform advantage that we've talked about multiple times, which is having the multi-product and all integrated together in a single data model. It just makes it hard for customers to switch off to something because you're serving multiple needs for them. Second is actually really interesting for OneTrust is, you know, it's workflows and institutional knowledge. So once you mapped out your data, you mapped out how you run your processes, how you track different things internally, where data sits and who's responsible for what, it actually takes an extreme amount of change management to then go insert a new vendor in there because your compliance people are trained on it, your marketing people are trained on it, your data science team is using it. So that's just, you know, just the workflow and institutional knowledge that builds up over time. The next one, which is a unique one with OneTrust, is that they've always been just very, very good at staying at the forefront of change in this market. And just this market is only like, you know, at least the privacy side is only less than 10 years old. So what you're seeing is, for example, I alluded to, like next year we'll have New Jersey, Texas, Florida come out with their own versions of, you know, their privacy rules, right? And so OneTrust is having webinars. They have, you know, lawyers on staff that are reading these actual bills and parsing through what it means for software. And the customers can trust, you know, the first day these rules go into effect, you know, OneTrust is going to be there and sort of have a consultative approach to helping them get over it. And that really comes with scale and focus, right? So it's very difficult for someone who's focused on a million things or doesn't have the scale to develop that capability. And I'd say the final one here is that the ecosystem element of customers talking to each other, you know, they, for example, if you have four airlines as customers, then the fifth one is most likely to go with you because you know the industry and they all talk to each other as long as they're doing a great job. And we're seeing, you know, professionals in the privacy world becoming OneTrust certified. We're seeing it in job descriptions, which always is a great leading indicator for, you know, an industry sort of consolidating around a product. And then, like I said, the partnerships with Adobe and things like that just make it the ecosystem so strong that, you know, enhances the value of the product overall. So, you know, as we zoom out and think about, you know, what that means for the business, you see that manifested in really strong gross retention and net retention rates as customers, you know, stay and grow with you. And ultimately, that's what produces really, you know, durable, high free cash flow SaaS companies, which, you know, OneTrust is fully on the track to be.
You touched on clearly the data advantage and moat that grows over time there. Is there also some sort of like indirect network effect? I'm not even sure if you could track this even, but like, imagine if you're a chief data officer, and then you see like, oh, wow, when I go to this website, like here's here's the OneTrust portal and doing this. And, oh, I wonder what it's doing on the back end stuff. Like, I guess there's no way to really track if that was happening. But like, do you think there's some sort of like kind of network effects in that way from the product spreading?
It's actually really interesting. It's not exactly what you said, somewhat different, but basically the same phenomena is on their third party due diligence or the vendor onboarding questionnaire side. What we're seeing to happen is that if I respond to three different customers, say I'm a B2B software company and I'm trying to sell my product to, you know, Coca-Cola and Bank of America, and they both send me questionnaires on OneTrust to fill out, then I have a OneTrust profile and it knows 80% of the stuff, like, you know, I'm SOC 2 certified and here's where my data centers are. And so the next time someone sends me one of those, I'm happy. Maybe if some customer comes to me, sends me a non-standard Word doc or something, I say, hey, you know, have you guys tried OneTrust? Like, they have a great third-party onboarding module, which I'm already have all my answers uploaded to. So that's one of the really cool network effects we're starting to see in this industry, which you had a great intuition for, but it's manifested in a slightly different spot.
It makes sense. I was just coming from what I see, but what you're saying makes a lot more sense. But regulation seems like it's not slowing down anytime. And so clearly that's a massive, massive tailwind. But what are some of the other tailwinds that we should be thinking about and understanding?
Yeah. So, you know, regulation, just to double click on that. I mean, I mentioned a few, but it's just the complexity of it, you know, across different jurisdictions, be it countries, even states, how you think about it. And then also these regulations get revised over time to add more things. So that's obviously a big one. The second one is, you know, with all companies just using more and more data, you just have more information. And if because of the importance of first party data and potentially cookies and things like that going away, you're more reliant on that. So it's really incumbent upon you to manage that well and really take care of your data estate, and that OneTrust really enables you to do that. The third one is, this is an interesting one that was a little bit surprising to me through the due diligence process, is that really the consumer expectations have gone up. I mean, you mentioned a few times on right now is how you check your cookie boxes and things like that. But, you know, you read high profile cases like Carta in our industry, where you had data collected from consumers on their cap table being used for marketing to another set of people.
Crazy.
You know, these days, because of social media, because of how consumers are aware of these practices, that can actually snowball really fast. And so that's been leading into more bottoms up adoption as opposed to top down because of a regulatory perspective. And just the consumer expectations around this are just higher, and what you do with their data and how you manage it.
Yeah, I mean, the cap table one is a tricky one, given that's like even more. I mean, I care about my data, but I certainly care about my LP's data, you know, even more than my own. So
right.
It makes sense. But we've kind of, you know, we've spent the whole time laying out the bull case here, right? And it's the product's expanding, it's crushing it, it's growing really fast, got a long tail of customers. Can further penetrate those customers to expand upon those, right? Like all these sort of things. But if you were to say like, hey, what are the risks, right? What should people be thinking about? And Kabir gives you a pass on this. It's all okay. But what are kind of some of the things that people should be aware of like, hey, here's a risk that OneTrust is working towards, right? But that might be out there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I would say this is more in the camp of sort of having a healthy level of paranoia about, as opposed to, you know, bear case or risk or something like that. Product to platform transitions are always hard, right? You have multiple products, you have multiple geos across big enterprises, and the selling complexity just increases. So you're going to different persona, like I described. You've got everything from marketing to security folks, and just managing that conversation correctly is so huge. So one of the things that the team is actually really self-aware about, and, you know, Kabir and the team talk about all the time, is you have to meet the customers where they are. So we need to be best of breed in every single thing we offer. And then we have to either elevate the conversation to strategics if we're in a C-level conversation with a chief privacy officer of a Fortune 500 company, but also be able to go talk to the business unit person in that company and say, you know, this is what it means for PIA management or data mapping in your specific use case. And that's just something that companies have to adapt to and execute well over time to deliver. And like I said, the team's got, you know, really strong focus on it, but that's certainly something that, you know, we're aware of and watching as well, is that product to platform transition, making sure you're best of breed and you bring the market along with you as a, and have the right elevation, altitude level in every conversation.
Well, Kumar, I want to thank you for the time. This was awesome and a great deep dive. You know, we'll be waiting for the OneTrust IPO so that we can make use of some of these insights that you provide. But I guess, you know, are there any things that you'd like to highlight for the audience? I would say first for OneTrust and then on the Sands Capital side, but anything that we missed or that's upcoming for the OneTrust team that, that we should be aware of?
One of the big things just on a OneTrust side is just such a tremendous focus on the enterprise piece. Shomik, we covered it with, you know, obviously a very large logo base, but just going deeper and just the focus there is on all about automation and providing more and more capabilities to bigger enterprises that just have these complex use cases. So I would just say that watch out for their summit in May. They're going to have a lot of great announcements around automation and AI. So how the products all work together, how you can use automation to do your compliance, do your reporting, and ultimately deliver best-in-class experiences to your customers. So don't want to steal their thunder here, but you know, make sure to mark on your calendar their May product announcements. There'll be a ton on that front. And then the second thing I would say is that if you're a talented engineer or salesperson, please reach out to OneTrust. They're hiring, and check out their careers page, and just also feel free to reach out to me directly, and I'm happy to triage and get you guys in front of the right people if you're interested.
You know, that's true value add from the investor right there. But Kumar, I guess like for Sands Capital too, anything you'd like to highlight or say to the audience that may not be aware as much about you guys?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we're like you said at the start, I focus on our late stage venture efforts. You know, we focus on identifying market leaders that can be large standalone companies over time. And we're always interested in meeting new companies and entrepreneurs. So would love to chat and connect if it makes sense. And any of happy talk. I personally spend my time in software, all up and down the stack, apps, all the way to infrastructure and cyber. So always willing to connect with, you know, visionary founders and talk about what we're seeing in the market.
Well, we love it. And thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thanks, Jomik. Really appreciate it.